It's called the order. The time is 9:35 and it is the 19th of March. We do have a quorum to conduct business consisting of Senator Bundy, Stevens, and myself, McGuire. And we have three items on the agenda, four items on the agenda today. First will be continuing testimony on Senate Bill number 183, and we have four people left to testify. So Pat Luby from AARP.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Good morning, Pat.
Thank you. My name is Pat Luby, and I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. Lifetime financial security is a cornerstone of the American dream. If you work hard and follow the rules, you'll be able to retire without financial worries. AARP, however, has a major concern. One quarter of our retirees don't participate in Social Security. You cannot outlive Social Security. In the past, it didn't matter so much that our public employees did not participate in the program. They had a defined benefit plan that would last as long as they lived. But now they have no defined benefit, they have no Social Security. The American dream of a secure financial retirement no longer exists for Alaska's newly hired public employees. It is possible to make a defined contribution plan work for you, as long as you don't live too long. But most of us will live into our mid-80s, many of us into our 90s. If a defined contribution plan is to work for you, you need to know your life expectancy. If married, how long will your spouse live? Will you be healthy right up until the time your heart stops beating? Or will you need some form of long-term care? Medicare doesn't pay for home health or nursing homes. You're responsible for that bill. What will inflation be for the next 20 years? Defined benefits and Social Security provide annual COLAs. The new DC plan doesn't. Will there be inflation and health care costs over the next 20 years? Any chance your utility bills will go up? What are the odds that fuel oil or natural gas may cost more? How about gasoline? You better have a crystal ball to make a defined contribution plan work. It is true that many companies have switched from defined benefits to defined contribution plans over the past few years. But all of us who work in the private sector have Social Security. No matter how much or how little we save in 401ks or IRAs, we will always have the defined benefit plan of Social Security and will last as long as we do. Our public employees used to have the same financial security before Senate Bill 141. No matter how long they lived, no matter what bad luck life circumstances dealt them, they would not starve, they would not end up on public assistance. AARP members rely on our public servants. They teach our grandchildren. They put out our home fires. They respond when we call for police assistance. We don't want these honorable public servants to help us their entire career, then worry about their health coverage and whether they will outlive their savings when they do retire. They deserve better than that. Please support Senate Bill 183 and give them the security they deserve. Thank you.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Pat. Do you really think Social Security is going to be around in 50 years?
Certainly, yeah. Well, Social Security, Senator Bundy, through the chair, Senator Bundy, the Social Security program will last. It's funded. It can pay complete 100% benefits up until 2041 or 2042, depending on the estimates. There definitely will be changes made to the Social Security program. We made changes back in 1983. Everybody needs to share in some of the changes and some of the effect of those changes. We were talking to Senator Murkowski about that last night. She expects some of that to take place next year after the presidential elections. The Social Security will be there. It's the cornerstone for all of us in our retirement savings. And we're all invested in it. None of us want to see it go away. We will tinker with it, but it will be there.
Well, Madam Chair,
yes, Senator,
I think Pat's view is not shared by a lot of young people I've talked to who think that Social Security will. And much of the testimony we've had is about how important Social Security is. And, you know, it's become a kind of a Ponzi scheme. And as Pat said, it may be around, but it will be changed. And that's what we've done with state retirement as well. I had a constituent contact me and said they've been listening and a lot of this concern about a lack of Social Security, but it was his contention that the SBS programs that the state offers is really a form of Social Security, and that employees have an opportunity to take advantage of that. And so while they don't have Social Security, they do have another program that may be around longer than Social Security.
Okay, thank you, Pat, for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, next, I have Everett Robbins with the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. Everett, are you there? Good morning. Can you hear me? Not there? Okay. Barbara Rich with the Retired Teachers of Alaska. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Rich. I'm the state president of the Alaska Retired Educators Association. It's the original retired teachers of the state of Alaska, and we are not union, although many of us do belong to NEA. We try to work together on things. I listened to all the testimony yesterday. I have talked to many of the new people that have been hired. We just gave a scholarship out to one lovely young lady from the Valley, and I asked her, as I have several of the others, if she was going to teach in Alaska. And she said she's a lifelong Alaskan, born here, her parents still live in the Valley, and she really wants to teach here. But she said in her college class, they discussed the pension that we now have for the new retirees. And she said, my parents and I think I should go to a state that has more benefits. There in the United States, it's either 13 or 15 states, depending on how you figure it. Some of them, just a few people in the state don't get Social Security, but it's between 13 and 15 states do not have Social Security, but they have all have a very good defined benefit plan, except us now. We're the only one that doesn't. The other states provide their teachers with both Social Security and a defined benefit plan. There are a few that have a hybrid plan. But this is important now, that students are looking at this. Many people say, well, they don't care. Senator Bundy says all they are interested in is a high salary, and that is not true. They are interested in the pension. And my heart goes out to them. My husband and I both retired from the state system. And right after we retired, I was not ready to retire. I wanted to teach more, but he wouldn't retire unless I did, and I knew he wanted to, so we retired. And right after he retired, he had a heart attack. We had to come to Anchorage. He had a second heart attack, and then they did 7 bypass surgery. If we had not had the retirement plan that we have, my husband and I would have been wiped out completely. All of our savings, our house, and everything. There would be nothing left for us. These children need to have something like we have. And with our state, we can afford to do that. But we need to provide for them, or we're not going to have decent people teaching our children and grandchildren. And that's important. We need to get the best people qualified to teach. Not people who can't get a job somewhere else is what we're going to have, or we're going to be just a training ground. We're going to have people come up here for a couple of years and just be training. This doesn't do me any good. It makes no difference because I have mine, as Senator Bundy does. But I'm concerned for the young people that are coming up. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Barbara. Questions for Barbara? Senator Bundy.
Well, I did want to share some material with the committee. It's from something called Mandate to Measure by Catherine Barnett and Richard Green, the Pew Charitable Trust. I just took out an excerpt that indicates that many other states have found that young people are not looking for 30 years and retirement. What they're looking for is flexibility, opportunity, and performance pay. And so there are different points of view. Now, this young lady and I, by accident of birth, arrived in Alaska when the situation was different. Neither one of us chose the date of our birth and had an opportunity to deal with what existed in Alaska at that time. Today is another day, and there are different circumstances.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Questions? Comments? Senator Stevens.
I appreciate your comments, and I agree. I think we need to have well-paid teachers, and when I first got here in 1970, teachers were well-paid, and they were attracting a lot of people, and I'd like to see us return to the position where we are paying teachers as high as any other state. But how do you address the issue of this unfunded liability? $9 billion, that has to be paid by somebody. It's going to be paid by the state. How do we avoid getting ourselves in such a position in the future?
Well, first, I think we need to look at what caused it. One of the causes is the body here. I came down here and I lobbied very, very hard against the RIP program, the early retirement program. Mm-hmm. And the only comment I got on that program was the same that Senator Bundy made yesterday. Well, we have a lot of teachers who don't want to be teaching, so we want to get rid of them. That's not the way to get rid of teachers, is to give them an early buyout. And I taught middle school in all my years of teaching, and with even my middle school students could understand that early retirement was going to hurt the system. That was only one of the things that hurt it. The other one was that it was not funded by many communities the way they should have. They did not fund it properly. Those were two big issues. The down in the market was another one. That's another part of it. But now we have to find the money, and I understand that this body has passed a bill to start getting that back in place like it should be, and I thank them all for that. But in the new bill, and the other one, the fourth part of that, is health. And that we don't have a lot of control over that. But we could have, if we start fighting some of the things like prescription drugs and a few other things. The one thing that we have to stop doing is cutting back Medicare. That's really hurting the senior population in Alaska. In our community, if you happen to have an older doctor and that doctor retires, you can't get a doctor. But the health care, I think if the state would work together on it, I think we could control a lot of this. And we have to work with our congressmen and get them to help us. This is a national issue, the health is, and we have to work for some kind of care for everyone, affordable health care for everyone. That's the big thing. But that's the whole secret right there. The pension itself, the PERS pension is funded, my figures are not exactly correct, but it's over 100%. The pension. The TRS is funded 93%. And actuaries feel it is tremendous if it's 80% funded. So our pension is very good, and it would be very funded. And if we could get the health care taken care of, and the Tier 2 in TERS and the Tier 3 in PERS is supposed to take care of that, but it has not had time to see if it would. Both people really have not retired very much. The ones that are retired are mostly the ones like me, Tier 1. But this...
Could you repeat what you said was funded 100%?
The PERS retirement is over 100%. The pension, not counting health care. This is the pension. Am I not right on this? And then, yeah, and the TERS is 93%.
Because that's kind of news to me. Because
I think it came from the ARMS board. Those numbers. I will find out exactly and send that to you.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Because if this were the case, then we wouldn't have the unfunded liability.
Oh, yes. But you have the unfunded liability because you did the things, the early retirement, you did not fund it the way it should be. It's funded if all these things are paid. And there were some districts that did not pay their share. But the state has to pay their share, just like the teachers and the public employees do, and they didn't in all cases. And then the early retirement, And then the health came out of it. That's why we have the unfunded liability plus the down in the market.
Okay, but when, if I could continue. Now, when did the state not pay its share?
I can't give you that exact answer, but there were some districts that felt, there was a time just a few years ago, as you all know, that everyone thought our pension system was doing so well, and there were some districts that did not pay their share.
But that's not, if I really don't want to argue, but that's not the state not paying its share. Because the state, I assume we've always paid our share. I've not heard that, but perhaps not. The there's some interesting, Madam Chair, if I can't, that, and certainly the people from the division can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's some kind of unique characteristics about these types of plan that don't allow you to get over, what is it, 5% or 10% over funding. And so there's some things that don't allow you to prepare for the bad day in the future quite as well as we would if we were doing it on our own personal account, you know, and we had a goal of 100%, but we got to 110%. We'd think that was really good. But I think there has to be a distribution somewhere. If you want to go ahead, go ahead.
Well, and some information that I've had, and the department hopefully will share more information. I'm sure not an actuary, but that many actuarial organizations say you shouldn't be ever funded more than about 80%, because if you approach 100%, the pressure will be to increase benefits because you have extra money. And then you get in a spiral that can cause you problems. So you're supposed to be funded about 80%. And if we are indeed at over 100%, that needs to be looked at.
And just a couple of points on that. What my understanding, Senator Green, and perhaps Pat can explain, is that it's one of those things nobody wants to point the finger at anybody, but happened to be during the Knowles administration, happened to be when some members of the legislature who are still here were here. Mm-hmm. There is some concern that, well, one, the ARM board wasn't presenting accurate information, so let's start there. They got their numbers from Mercer, let's start there. Mm-hmm. But then add to it the political equation of having to put into the budget the real numbers that it would cost to afford a system. And then to ask employees, who are then your voters, to contribute an amount that would also be reflective of reality. And you start seeing where things spiral. And it isn't that you can point to any one single thing and say, right, that's the moment in time. But my perception of it is that it all balled up. And mm-hmm. and there is a little bit of enough blame to sort of go around.
There's the four different things.
Barbara, and then Senator French.
There's the four different things altogether that hurt it. Well, and then Mercer also. That's five, I guess. No, that was the one.
Senator French.
I think this question kind of all goes back to Senator Stevens. You started by saying, what about the unfunded liability? What do we do about that? And that's what got us on this long round of questions and answers. And I think it's important to keep in mind that this bill doesn't fix it or break it, either one. We've fixed it with a different mechanism, which is to contribute more money to that unfunded liability and to correct the past errors, whatever they were, whoever's fault they were. We've taken corrective action. That's the real point. But with or without a DB plan, the unfunded liability exists, and we have to fix it. If we go back to DB, which I firmly believe we should, you can fund it in a way every year that doesn't cause any economic pain, any more pain than necessary, to provide for a stable retirement for your public employees.
The
question really was, how do you avoid an unfunded liability? That was the question.
Oh, and that's again a perfect question, but the answer to that is, you know, be ever vigilant. You know, there are many, many jurisdictions that have avoided this issue by being proactive, by being conservative in their approach, by questioning the assumptions and staying on top of it year to year to year.
Well, and I think it involves somebody sitting down and reflecting back on what's happened in Tier 2 and 3, and perhaps it is a carve-out from medical, perhaps there's a separate stipend, perhaps there's a separate analysis, maybe it's your bare-bones plan, maybe it isn't all of the things that are there. But, you know, just one other point I wanted to make on Senator Bundy's handout, and we had this discussion yesterday as well, I am one of these young people, and the young people in my friend group are looking at retirement. So there's a difference. There's a difference of opinion there. I suspect that you're right, that there are some young people that don't care about it. But more and more, I find my generation caring about their retirement, looking at their parents and saying, not only their retirement, but how they're going to live with dignity in their final years, health-wise as well. And the other thing that I want to point out about your handout is that would it were a choice between merit pay and high pay and benefits, then I might even be willing to go down that path. But I don't see this state ever going to a merit-based system, and I don't see, for all the political reasons that we could discuss, and I don't see us increasing teacher pay. And so now you've got the worst of all scenarios. You have teachers at some of the lower rates in the nation, so we can't attract them that way. We're still geographically challenged, and particularly when it comes to rural teachers and peace officers. And then now on top of it, you're saying you can't get Social Security but for the cases we've talked about, and you don't have a stable retirement. And so that's, to me, a real challenge that you're putting out there to attract and retain good folks to come here. Senator Bundy.
At the outset, I acknowledge that where you stand on an issue often depends on where you sit and your life experiences. We actually do have merit pay for teachers. We have a pilot program that I was helpful in getting passed a couple of years ago, fought tooth and claw by NEA because they want to support, I would say, common factors, if not mediocre. So we do have merit pay. It was fraught with political challenges, but a number of schools took advantage of it and like the private sector, rewarded outstanding performance with additional compensation. To Senator Stevens' question, how will we deal with the unfunded mandate? As we're currently doing it, dipping into the general fund. And one of the biggest frustrations I hear from people in private enterprise is that you guys are using their money to fund state employees' retirement. And if we're going to have a defined benefit, then the contribution from the employee has to go up enough that there is no unfunded mandate. And I don't think that that's a politically achievable thing either.
Not well, constitutionally achievable.
It could be, you know, but there could be a discussion about it that would be, I mean, I think what frustrated me about the debate and the repeal is that it, by the end, it just became such a political pressure cooker that I feel like a lot of the details or potential corrections were lost in the mix. And it's not to say that there didn't need to be corrections or a look at it, which I think this body did a good job of doing in recognizing the unfunded liability, but it's that there might be a middle ground to pull back to. And that's my point in you know, continuing to support the idea of going forward. It likely would be higher contribution rates that are more reflective of reality. But I think at the end of the day, too, there's always an eye toward, you know, what are your state functions? What are those things that we as a state want to pay for? And last I checked, you know, education is still in the Constitution, and it's still something that we want to publicly fund. We want an education to be accessible to all Alaskans, irrespective of income and irrespective of where they live. And if we're going to do that, then we have that commitment. And so it's different than, in my opinion, than analyzing what happens in the private sector, because it's a constitutional commitment and a state function that we've obligated ourselves to.
Madam Chair, I have a question. In the conversation we had a few years ago in the construction of the new plans, the conversation over and over was that you can't, because of the contract you have with someone, you can't change that plan. If you're going to make any changes, you have to go forward with a new tier. Does this do that?
It's a prospective.
Is it tier 5 and tier 4? Because I don't see it. I just was kind of curious because I was wondering how you.
It's prospective, though. I can tell you that, Madam President.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jesse Keel. I'm staff to Senator Elton. In answer to Senator Green's question. As you noted, Madam Chair, the bill is prospective. So for the new hire, this bill would put them in admittedly a previous tier, but it would not change the deal they've got. For those who are currently in the defined contribution tier, it would offer an option, an election, a choice. Those individuals could, if they chose, take the value of their defined contribution account and apply it and convert it value for value to the defined benefit system. And there's, if you'll look in the at the tail end of the bill, there's a rather lengthy section that ensures that that conversion, if they choose, no one is forced under the bill, if they choose, that conversion doesn't create any unfunded liability because it is the lesser of their actual time of service. Right? It's been roughly 2 years since the DC plan was created, or the actuarial value of their account balance. So if I had a defined contribution account and had done staggeringly well in the market, and the actuarial value of my account balance was greater than my 2 years of service, if it was only valued according to the actuaries, and Madam Chair, I don't claim to understand the mathemagic they do, but the actuary said, sorry, you've got a year and a half of value. That's the credited service they would get under this conversion option. But in specific answer to your question about the constitutional provision, only a new hire, for instance, in PERS, a state employee, would be a Tier 3 hire, in effect. Whether the division chose to call that Tier 5 or not would is really nomenclature. But a new hire would have the same Tier 3 deal that somebody hired on in January of 2005 got. That would be the deal they get coming in, so there's no diminishment of their benefit under the Constitution. Madam Chair, if I could very briefly, and I promise not to take the committee's time, address the question of unfunded liability, because it's a significant one. There is a sheet in your packet, and I promise not to run through all these numbers. It looks roughly like this. It says normal cost. And normal cost, just to be clear, should be, I believe, behind a memorandum that Senator Elton sent to the finance co-chairs about a year ago. Normal cost, very briefly, is what the percentage of pay that you have to put into the system this pay period for this pay period's worth of benefits. It's forward-looking. It's the pre-funding that we do. And if you look down the third chart on that page, there's accrued liability. And without running through the whole chart, what you see if you take a look is that, and these numbers, I apologize, are about a year and a half old. These are when the unfunded liability was valued at roughly $7 billion between the two systems combined.
Right.
What you see if you look is that the liabilities, accrued liabilities of Tier 1 in both PERS and TERS together, about $13 billion. The accrued liability of Tier 2 TERS, that's what this bill would hire new teachers into. Tier 3 PERS, where this bill would hire new public employees, put together about $1.4 billion. So in rough terms, and I apologize for sort of springing this on you. On the earlier charts, you have the number of participants in each of those plans. Mm-hmm. In rough terms, the tiers into which this bill would hire people, about two-thirds as many members as Tier 1. And yet, the total liability, I had it in my head a minute ago, total liability is something on the order of a 15th. We've never broken out assets by tier, so I can't compare the unfunded liability of Tier 1 and Tier 3, or Tier 1 and Tier 2 in TERS. But 1/15th the liability with about 2/3 as many members. Mm-hmm. In essence, the changes from Tier 1 to Tier 2 in the teacher's retirement system, the changes from Tier 1 on the way down to Tier 3 in the public employee's retirement system, pretty much covered our unfunded liability issue. And Senate Bill 141 did some other things that Senator French said assured constant vigilance, a second actuary, mandatory experience studies, not when we can get around to it. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever pays less than this normal cost rate, even if the actuary says, you know, right now I think you've got extra money. Under Senate Bill 141, Nobody ever pays less than the normal cost rate of the benefits accrued. And this bill does nothing to change those things, Madam Chair, Senator Green. We're keeping all the safety valves and going back to a benefit that gives retirement security.
And let me ask you one more question, too. Excellent, by the way, because there's a lot of myths about what the bill does and doesn't do. One question Senator Stevens posed yesterday with respect to, let's say you're in the Habitat Division of DNR, you want to go over and teach science in Kachemak Bay Elementary. Will this bill reconnect your term of service for vesting purposes? Does it fix that 141 problem?
Madam Chair, the way the bill is drafted, the way the bill is before this committee, if you're hired the day after this bill becomes effective, the problem's fixed for you.
Okay.
If you are currently in the DC plan and you choose to convert, the problem's fixed for you. If you choose not to convert, this bill doesn't fix that.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Any other questions for the bill sponsors, representative? Okay. Anyone else here in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 183? Anyone online? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, that brings the bill back for committee discussion. Senator French.
Madam Chair, I think we've had an excellent discussion on this bill. We've really discussed mainly the state affairs aspects of the bill. I know there's huge financial implications that I believe should be taken up by the appropriate committee. And so with that, I would move SB 183 out of committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
And I'll object.
And there's an objection noted. Do you want to speak to it or just?
Yeah. You know, and again, I acknowledge that different folks have different points of view. I hear from a lot of constituents, I think, right up there with the frustration that state employees only work 37 and a half hour work week, stipulating teachers work a lot more than that, is the fact that the public is supporting a retirement plan that the public, it's vastly different than what the public could have access to in the prior to 141 at least. One of the things that disturbs me the most about the discussion we've heard is the almost, that I would characterize, indentured servant nature. We're going to make people stay here and work in Alaska because it's financially important to them when they retire. They could be sour on their job, they could be unhappy, they could be doing a lousy job, and they really need to move on. But we're going to encourage them, force them almost, to stay here because the retirement that they'll lose if they move. I think probably you, Madam Chair, are the only one that was born here, and if indeed you were, the rest of us came from somewhere else. And again, personal experience. I remember cashing out my paltry teacher's retirement in Washington State to finance my move to Alaska. And why I'd want to deny that opportunity to someone in Alaska who wanted to move somewhere else. Now, those that grew up here often are wanting to see what the other side of the coin is like in other parts of the world. Indeed, I would not deny them that. I would hope they'd realize what they miss and come back. But the idea that we're going to make people stay in Alaska so that they can meet that ironic definition of sourdough, or sour on Alaska and not enough dough to leave. It just doesn't make sense to me. I think that if we repeal the defined benefit, our defined contribution plan, we will be putting a strong drain on the public treasury. And I'm fully confident that in a few years the state will be in a deficit. And once we establish a retirement program, you know, constitutionally, we've got to stick with that. And we'd have to cash out the corpus of the permanent fund before we could ever cut retirement benefits. And that's not the place I want to go. So I'm opposing the bill moving forward. As I've said in other situations, too often we move bills from one committee to the other just out of courtesy, and sometimes we get a real mess that shows up on the floor. And sometimes those political mistakes actually pass into law.
Yes, and my vote to move it out, it goes on to Judiciary and Finance, is actually a reflection of the fact that I think it's a good idea, not just a political implication or anything like that. I think that there's probably more work to be done on the bill. I prefer the idea of keeping an option for employees as between a DC and a DB plan throughout. And perhaps there are more places that this bill could be ratcheted down, but I think in general, House Bill 141 had some great pieces of it, but went too far. And I think we will see the effects of that when it's too late. I think we're starting to see it already when it comes to our teachers and the frontline folks, the folks that sat up here yesterday and talked about going in to face those fires to save our families that we don't want to do. We don't want to do those jobs, to respond to those crime situations out in the middle of the middle of Alaska in the cold, dark winter nights. And I think that if we're going to attract and retain folks and we're going to ask them to do a state function, then we need to be sure that they have a humane and adequate retirement. So that's for my vote. Senator Stevens?
Well, this has been a very good discussion, I think, and one that in the end I think has to continue. I don't know that this bill is going to make it through this session. We've got so few days left. We've got the other body to deal with. I question whether it'll ever make it through to the end in this session, but I think it's too early to kill the bill. I have serious concerns about, certainly about the unfunded liability. We've got serious concerns about issue of transferability from PERS, TERS, between PERS, TERS, and TRS, but I think from what Jesse has told us, it sounds like that might have been resolved to some extent. So. I think it's too early to kill it. I'm going to vote to move it ahead to the next committee, though I have very serious qualms about it.
Okay, Madam Secretary, will you call the roll on the movement of Senate Bill 183 out of Senate State Affairs?
Senator Trent?
Yes.
Senator Green?
No.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator McGuire?
Yes. And so Senate Bill 183 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note has moved out of Senate State Affairs. Thank you to everyone that testified. Now we have the matter of Senate Bill 259, effective date medical assistance laws. Go ahead and come forward. Catherine, yes. Hi, Catherine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Senate State Affairs.
Thank you. I'm Catherine Kurtz, and I'm an assistant reviser with legal services for the legislature. And this bill is before you as a special reviser's bill. What happened was in 2006, we have an effective date clause on an act that turns out to not correspond exactly to reality. The effective date clause anticipated that one plan would be submitted and approved by the federal government, and that's just not quite what happened. In fact, provisions were submitted separately, some of them were approved, some of them weren't, and all of this creates uncertainty about the effective date of the provisions of that act. So this is a separate reviser's bill intended to clarify that, and we're presenting it separately because the retroactivity and effective date clauses are just a little bit more complex than the issues dealt with in the regular reviser's bill, which Pam Finley can address later. But that's why this bill is here, so you can review the issues separately. And we also have John Sherwood from the department here this morning if you have questions about the medical assistance program aspects of it.
Okay, reviser's bill. Whew.
Madam Chair.
Got to get excited. Senator Bundy.
I do have another meeting.
Okay.
Excuse myself.
Okay.
You need a motion?
Yes, actually. Does anybody have any questions? I had staff look over this to be sure there wasn't anything substantive hidden in here or anything we wanted to hide in here.
That's 259, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Green.
I would move Senate Bill 259 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay, is there an objection to that motion? Whew, hearing and seeing none.
That was tough.
Senate Bill 259 has moved. And that brings us to our final revisor's bill, Senate Bill 260. Equally exciting. Good morning, Pam Finley.
Good morning, thank you.
Pam Finley gets excited about this. I want you to know.
I do.
She does.
Thank you very much for hearing both of these bills, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Pam Finley. I'm the revisor of statutes. I'm not even going to go through what this is about. I'd be happy to answer questions, but I realize that you all have time. I would note that there is an amendment, which I hope is in your packet. This was something, a mistake that we found after the bill had gone to Ledge Council. And which,
this is a revisor to the revisor's
yes,
bill.
Yes, right. Well, we keep finding there seems to be no end of mistakes for us to find. This one actually was found by the Department of Law, and they asked for this change, which I think is appropriate.
Amendment number one. Do you want to offer this, Senator Green?
I'll be happy to. I would move amendment number one to Senate Bill 260, version A.
Okay. Is there an objection to amendment number one? Okay, hearing and seeing none. We now have the revisor's bill as amended in front of us.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator French.
Yesterday in the office, we were getting ready for this hearing, and we were sort of joking that these hearings have a certain formality to them, and basically they are comprised of us looking the revisor in the eye and making her swear three times in a row that there's nothing in here that's dangerous. So if Ms. Finley will just swear three times in a row, are you sure there's nothing in here that's going to hurt me, then I'm comfortable with the bill.
I very much hope and believe that there is nothing in the bill that is going to make any of us unhappy.
Say it again.
Ditto and ditto.
And they are, and Pam, as we discussed, these are technical changes going back into different parts of the statute to comport with, for example, federal language, changing the CFR numbers.
Yes. I'll tell you, quite honestly, there's only one thing that's strikes me as a little odd in this thing, and that is the definition of fireworks, which referenced the ICC, which was abolished in 1995.
Page so we had 12.
Yeah, we had to come up with something different, and I kept trying to get to deal with that entire section, and I was referred to a man named Grizz, who is the pyrotechnic man in the state, I guess. It is possible that Grizz will come back in some years and say, oh, there need to be more changes to this. But at least we got rid of the ICC reference.
Oh, my goodness.
Madam Chair, if we could get him on the line, that would be the best advisor ever.
That's page 13, right? Senator Stevens.
I happen to have met Grizz because he came and spoke to the statehood commission. And he is planning a very big fireworks in Anchorage.
That's right.
Statehood.
Huge.
He's the one.
Okay.
He will blow everything up simultaneously.
Well, it is an interesting read on page 13 there, so in your free time. Okay, so thank you, Pam. Anything else that you want to bring to the State Affairs attention?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, excellent. Well then, is there a motion? Senator Green?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 260 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay, and so Senate Bill 260, individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, has moved out of Senate State Affairs. Let's take a brief at ease. We're still in Senate State Affairs. We have Representative Gruenberg, who has been excitedly talking to all members of the committee for about a month. So you're here. Tell us about your bill.
Well, this is a bill that has this is the third time I believe it's passed the House. It basically says you cannot, first of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Max Gruenberg, represents House District 20, and I appreciate the chair and the members hearing the bill. To answer your question, Madam Chair, the bill basically says you cannot watch a DVD or a similar kind of a visual display while you're driving. And the purpose of this is because there was a major accident a few years ago where there were allegations that this was exactly what happened, and two people died. And it's a type of distracted driving, and I think that the state and the legislature should ban this type of thing. As the Senate president said to me quietly yesterday, this is a no-brainer. Nobody should be doing this. And I absolutely quite agree. But unfortunately, we have some people who don't have the kind of mature judgment. Hopefully we do, and most people in the state. And I would hope that, that you can join Representative Gatto and myself in supporting the bill. And I know the chair is personally familiar with the family and very supportive, and I hope that you will be too. And we've crafted this, it's gone through many, many committees, and has widespread support. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. And we were talking before the committee that, you know, perhaps we just eliminate a bunch of laws and make a law against being using poor judgment or being stupid, however you want to clarify it. But I think I have gone back and I've thought about this, and I think that if nothing else, perhaps the publicity surrounding it, its existence on the books, might reach someone who wouldn't otherwise recognize that you shouldn't be watching a DVD while you drive. I don't know what brings a person to do that, frankly, but perhaps it's a generational thing. Maybe someone who is a new driver hasn't really thought through the fact that they can't do everything, and perhaps your bill and the publicity surrounding it will make that one person take a minute more to think about it. I hope so. And and it's a tragedy what happened to the Weisers. So is there any further discussion from the committee? Senator Green.
I just have one question. Do you really think it's going to make any difference to the person who would probably, in all likelihood, do this as well as other goofy things, such as driving while they've been drinking? And although I just think there's a segment of population this isn't going to mean a dip to, and those who wouldn't do it otherwise don't need statute. I don't know. I think it's a little... I don't think it speaks too highly of our population to say don't watch TV while you're driving.
Well, I tend to agree.
Yeah.
I wish that that weren't true. I don't think necessarily the DWIs, people who drive while they're intoxicated, listen to the laws until maybe they get thrown in jail for 3 days or whatever. But this is the penalties. Right now it's simply an infraction through the chair, Madam President. This will raise it to a serious felony, and it basically will say if you're watching a DVD while driving, that in and of itself is negligent manslaughter if you kill somebody, et cetera. It raises the penalties to very severe without having to show you were also negligent. This becomes, in the legal sense, negligence per se.
Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gruenberg, why do you exempt cell phones and personal data assistance?
Because I couldn't get that through previous committees.
CDAs.
Because some of them, I speak for myself, my co-prime sponsor doesn't support that either. And I just wanted to get this through, and I personally would like to see things expanded, but politics is the art of the practical.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, I don't understand why you'd say a front seat passenger watching a video display is not a violation of the statute. It seemed like it would be a distraction, a front seat driver watching an iPod or some kind of video display. It seems to me like it would be a distraction to the driver.
Where are you? What
It's in your analysis on the third paragraph on the bottom, starting with the crime covers any equipment, and the last sentence, a front seat passenger.
Just a moment, please.
And Max, as you're looking, I'll help you. It happens by definition, because on page 1, line 9, you're defining the unlawful act itself as the person who is driving the motor vehicle is then watching it. So by definition, if it's a passenger, wherever they happen to be located in the vehicle, then you're not under the rubric of the law.
Absolutely.
So what this says is that it'd still be a violation for the driver.
Yes,
to be distracted.
That's correct.
I see. Okay, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. But not a violation.
I apologize. I had to find where I said the chair's absolutely right. And she heard this in judiciary and is very familiar with this. Thank you.
Senator French.
I see you've also exempted navigation and global positioning displays. Mm-hmm. So it's okay for me to look at my cell phone. It's okay for me to plot my course on a GPS system that's showing me which turns to make on the streets. Those are both still okay under your bill.
Not if it's if I may, through the chair. The GPS, yes, for now.
Is exempted, right.
For the cell phone, right. Not if it's a visual display, you're not to watch it. If it's an audio thing, you can talk on it. But we're talking about page 2, line 8, Senator, Chair. Audio equipment is okay. It's if you have a visual cell phone, not to do that's distracting.
Question. I got my wife an iPhone for Christmas, and one of the things she likes about it is that when the phone rings from someone that's on her little list of people that she talks to regularly, you can have a picture of that person come up when the phone rings. And, it might be our son, it might be me. When I call her, she gets a picture of me, and then she pushes a little display. She says, well, stop. Talk to the hand. She answers it sometimes. Let's put it that way. And so I'm just curious whether she's, are we getting into trouble there? Are we not getting into trouble? Is it okay for her to have a photo of me on her phone that she looks at when she pushes answer or not answer?
Well, as long as she doesn't have an accident that results from it, she's okay. It's the problem arises if she's doing that and an accident results.
Well,
is that right?
No,
Representative, because isn't it an A misdemeanor to drive a motor vehicle, commits the crime of driving with a screen device if the person is driving a motor vehicle and the vehicle has a call it a video monitor or other similar means of providing a visual display that is in full view of a driver in a normal driving position while the vehicle is in motion. That's that iPhone with my picture on it.
I stand corrected.
Well, I think we need a limited entry on attorneys.
This would be an interesting question because technically speaking on page 2, line 5 and 6, specifically exempts portable cellular telephones or personal data assistance being used for verbal communication. So if I were your attorney, I would argue no, it's not a video monitor. In fact, it's a portable cell phone and it's being used for verbal communication, never mind the fact that your phone, your picture appears. That's what I think.
Our simple exception that only Senator French's picture could appear on everyone's cell phone.
Madam Chair, where does this bill go after here?
Goes to judiciary.
Comes to you.
We'll work on the iPhone issue a little more.
Okay, we'll exempt iPhones.
Thank you.
Okay, so is there any further committee? Is there anyone here in the audience that wishes to testify on House Bill 88? Anyone online? Okay, hearing and seeing none.
Wait.
Okay, public testimony is closed, but it brings us back. Senator Green?
Okay, so if I have a television in the front of my 1990 van, and it's up there somewhere near the rearview mirror or whatever, I'm in violation?
Through the chair, if it can be seen by you while you're driving.
Yeah.
If it's not,
even if
not
it's not on?
A locking device that only turns it on if your car is stopped. Or not if it's only visible your passengers.
Just a point of clarification.
Senator French?
I heard the senator ask whether it was on or not, and that that's excluded. Page 1, line 13 says the monitor or visual display is operating
right
while the person is driving. So if it's turned off, you're not in violation.
Oh, I see.
I wanted to make sure we didn't get a misunderstanding.
Okay.
Senator Green?
Okay, so 2 continues from 3. Line 10 is
yes.
And.
Is yeah, all 3 has to, yeah.
Okay.
And the other part about this, Senator Green, that I remember we worked on years ago, is that there are a lot of these vans that have a DVD for the children. And they are sometimes placed in the front. Usually it's toward the back. But the part that was added in on line 11 is that it is that can be viewed by a driver in a normal driving position while the vehicle's in motion. So even if you're driving and it's up here, that's not the kind of thing you're talking about.
No, I have one for my grandkids.
Yeah.
I need to talk to you about that. I have to get in the back seat to drive in order to watch the movie.
Right. Okay, so further committee discussion on House Bill 88. Is there a motion? Senator French?
Madam Chair, I will move CS for House Bill number 88 be moved on from this committee to the next committee referral with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Okay.
Where does it show the referrals?
Let's see. That would be in the original bill. Let's take a brief at ease. To move out House Bill 88, CS for House Bill 88. Is there an objection? Okay, hearing and seeing none. CS for House Bill number 88 has moved out of the Senate State Affairs Committee. Thank you, Representative Groenberg. And we're adjourned.